closer to securing the Democratic Party nomination and winning this election in November.
724, man, it's such a double standard. And it's hard to point it out in a lot of ways because she's the only female in the race. But a lot of the talk after her speech last night was, boy, her voice sounds terrible. Boy, she sounds so shrieky. She sounds so tired.
I know. I heard that, too.
I mean, you know, a female voice is going to do that, and you can't do anything about it.
No. And you know what? You should have heard Bill Clinton on Sunday. His was really gravelly.
His voice was so gravelly, you could barely hear him hitting on the interns.
What? Why wouldn't say
that
part?
But anyway, you just heard from Hillary Clinton a few moments ago here on the show. Dan Merica covers the Democrats around this lap around the sun and joins us now. He covers them for CNN. Good morning, Dan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. So, is Bernie Sanders done? What are people telling you?
You know, the Clinton campaign would quietly like you to think that. His campaign says that, you know, it's not over. They're going to take this all the way to the convention in Philadelphia. But it sure is difficult for him to feasibly make up the delegate deficit he currently has. I mean, after last night, they certainly did not expect to be swept in all five states. Even the Clinton campaign didn't expect to win all five states.
Well, there's
her delegate math will be somewhere close to over 300 delegates easily.
There's no way
than Obama ever had. Yeah,
there's no way to make up that deficit in real time without momentum, because the momentum is all you would be able to use going forward if you're Bernie Sanders to shake some of those superdelegates free down the road. So the Democratic system is set up in favor of Secretary Clinton at this point. But the only way he breaks that is if he wins. And if he didn't win last night, how's he going to win going forward?
So there's a few contests coming up where he will likely win caucus states, like, you know, for example, Washington State, Idaho, Alaska. But those states are so small compared to the states Secretary Clinton won last night, you know, Ohio, Florida, North Carolina, that, you know, the momentum might be there. He might be able to claim, you know, I've won the last four or five states, but the delegate math will be more, you know, nickel and diming his way towards taking out that 300-plus delegate lead. His campaign is now saying that they're going to have to convince superdelegates, these Democratic officials, right, who have their own vote at the convention, to come their way. Like, it's likely the entire Democratic establishment has been behind Hillary Clinton for months now.
Right. And the superdelegates being the leadership of the party in various ways that you would quantify leadership, they want to back the winner.
Yeah, absolutely. So members of Congress, you know, Democratic chairs in different states. I mean, it would be hard for them to justify switching from the candidate who is winning has a 300 delegate lead to the candidate who is claiming momentum, even if he doesn't have it.
Now, in this circumstance, in every presidential cycle, there's always the notion that, well, I want my message to be heard, so I'm going to continue to go on for the indefinite future for that reason. Anybody on the Sanders side telling you that off the record?
No, I mean, they haven't been saying that for the entire campaign. They've been saying that he wants to win. He wants to be president. Now, of course, he has impacted the race. There's no doubt about mm-hmm. it. There are a number of issues that have, you know, been talked about, and there are a number of issues that Secretary Clinton has made key in her campaign because of the fact that Bernie Sanders was her opponent. But you won't hear that from the Sanders campaign, especially not publicly, because that more or less it's defeat, and they're not ready to do that.
And, of course, the big piece of this always comes down to money, and he still has a lot of it, doesn't he?
A ton of it, and he can raise a ton of money, too. I mean, the numbers, after other election nights, he's raised millions of dollars in the short time after polls closed. Obviously, that might be different last night because he didn't win a state, but he still has an amazing ability to fundraise online, far superior to Hillary Clinton. She has to spend a lot more time actually going and asking for money, going to fundraisers. For the last three quarters, she has personally headlined 58 fundraisers. In the entire campaign, Bernie Sanders has headlined around 9. That's a lot of time that Hillary Clinton is spending asking for money. And Bernie Sanders, all he has to do is, you know, send an email out or make a pitch at an event like he did a few nights ago after the, I think it was after the New Hampshire primary. He just made a pitch at an event and raised close to $6 million.
It's Arizona, Idaho, and Utah next week, and then Alaska, Hawaii, and Washington after that. And then we're into April, and Wisconsin leads off April. Dan Merica covers the Democrats for CNN and obviously keeps an eye on the Republicans as well, but we'll talk about that next time. Dan, I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Take care. Dan Merica is at CNN, and we'll throw up his contact info. You should follow us on Twitter at Cochran Show. Basically everything we talk about ends up on the Twitter feed at Cochran Show or Facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show. And WGNRadio.com/elections is where we put election coverage throughout campaign 2016. As of this point, and Pat Brady talked about this last night on Channel 7. Pat Brady did a great job on Channel 7.
He did. I was watching him. He did very well.
He called me this morning on the way in. He's on French TV this morning.
Is he?
Yeah. French are not big fans of Donald Trump, and when they heard Brady's take on the whole thing, they wanted him on.
Does he speak French, or are they going to have somebody kind of in the background going?
He doesn't. Let me tell you, he doesn't speak English. It's 7:30. We'll come back with the big story next on 720 WGN. /7:41, one of the big races last night was the state's attorney race, and Kim Fox joins us now, the winner of the primary and the next state's attorney. And congratulations, Ms. Fox. Well done.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
How are your girls? We're worried about them.
They're fine. They are home sleeping at this hour. They were overwhelmed by the gravity of what was happening. I don't think they could appreciate what it meant for mommy to be running for office until the confetti was in their face and the crowd was there.
Sure.
They realized what was happening.
How old are they?
13 and 10.
It's pretty emotional stuff when you see your parents put everything into something and have it emerge that way. It was just kind of a release at that point, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the 13-year-old, I was telling someone, it's hard to impress 13-year-olds. And, you know, when we wrapped last night, to hear her say that she was proud of me meant the world. So it was a big night.
All right. Now you got the job. You sure you want it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. See, we've got big challenges here in Cook County, and we need someone who is committed to tackling them, who takes this work deeply personally. And so I absolutely want to give my all to fix our broken criminal justice system.
Kim, congratulations. I know you talked about turning the page. You gave a really nice speech last night, and you made reference to law enforcement and the task and the job that they face every day. So how are you going to start bridging the gap between law enforcement and a community lacking trust right now?
Certainly. I think we have to begin by meeting everyone where they are. I think the conversation around, you know, the relationship between law enforcement and community has to start from a collaborative place as opposed to a divisive place. And again, I think we all share the same goals to make sure that our families are safe and protected, you know, whether you're a police officer or, you know, a plumber. That's what we all want, the same things. And so when you come from a place of commonality and start the conversation, I think you can move it further. But we have to start having those conversations on both sides.
As you go forward with this now, do you have a 100-day strategy like the man or the woman in the White House will have?
We're going to be working on that. You know, in the coming days, I'm going to get a little rest, spend time with my children, and get my head clear and assemble, you know, a group of people from diverse backgrounds to look at the enormity of the task and put together priorities. We know for a fact, you know, rebuilding trust is a top priority, as well as dealing with the issues of gun violence that are plaguing our community. How we do that, what that first 100 days looks like, is something that we'll be working on in the coming months.
And Kim, I know you said you're going to work with the mayor, but also make it clear to him that you're going to be tough on crime no matter what, even if there's some sort of corruption or allegations or whatnot in his office or in City Hall.
Yeah, I mean, the expectation of the people of Cook County is that we hold everyone accountable for their actions, no matter who you are. And that's an expectation that I will continue, that we have to do that. If we want to repair trust, the way that you do that is that you make sure that anybody, stakeholder or not, is held accountable for their actions. So I continue to maintain that.
Who's the first person you called after you won, since your family was with you?
Who was the first person I called? I didn't call. I lost my phone for a few hours last night, which was miraculous. Uh-oh. Having been on the campaign trail.
Let's start a conspiracy theory. Somebody stole Kim Fox's phone.
I think it was my team who finally said she'll stop looking down and pay attention to everything around. Yeah, I absorbed. I had friends from Cabrini-Green. One of my childhood best friends flew in from California to surprise me last night, and he was there. My brother was there. My husband and my children were there. So I absorbed it with my family who showed up last night.
And did you get a call from Anita Alvarez?
She did, in fact, call. She called, and she was quite gracious. She offered to help with the transition. And as I said, before, it's clear that she enjoyed being an assistant state's attorney. She dedicated her career to that. And certainly she wants to make sure that the office transitions in a smooth manner, because it's about the work of the office and not the individual.
Well, it's nice to hear. And that's the way it should work. Congratulations. I hope you get some rest, and our best to your family. And tell your girls, if they felt self-conscious last night, they came across great and they're beautiful. And I wish you nothing but success, because we need you to be great.
I appreciate it. Thank you both so much.
There you go.
Thank you, Kim.
Kim Fox.
Her daughters were so, so cute.
And you don't want those little girls to feel bad because they were crying on TV. They were just, letting it go because their mom won.
Oh, they were so excited.
7:46, do a traffic update, and then I want you to meet Dr. Dan. So let's do this as we do a live show meeting, Mary. You're going to do the traffic, and then right away, before we go to the break, I want to talk to Dr. Dan, because we have another guest coming up as well, Tim O'Brien, who is somebody that Donald Trump sued not so long ago. We could do the whole show on people Trump sued. But before we get to that, we get to the cars. What's happening, Mayor? Dr. Dan is here. For those of you who have seen him and know his work, know that there is no greater pancake artist on the planet.
Oh, shucks.
No, it's true. Don't you be modest. And our friends at MB Financial Bank are big, 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 big fans of yours. And as part of the MB Financial Bank Breakfast of the Blackhawk today, Dr. Dan's nice enough to come in and make some special pancakes. You're going to make a pancake of my head?
That's what I'm told, yeah.
All right, do you have enough batter?
I think so. Okay. I might need to mix a little extra.
What's the largest head you've ever made a pancake of?
Largest head I've ever made a pancake of.
I mean, I got to be close,
metaphorically,
right?
Speaking. I did a Donald Trump pancake once.
Oh, he's got a huge head.
Yeah, he's got all that.
Did he see it?
I have no idea.
He wasn't in a room.
No.
Because if he saw it, he would have tried to sell it, license it, market it and sell it.
Yeah.
How do you become a pancake artist?
Well, I got started as a fry cook at a diner in South St. Louis.
Okay.
And I started doing smiley faces on pancakes, sure, just to try and make my tips better. And the very first time I served one, gentleman told me it made his day, and he gave me $15 for it, and a little light bulb went off.
Ding, ding, ding.
All right, I'll keep doing that. About 5 years later, a friend of mine had taken a picture of me and put it online, and it went viral out of the blue. And the Today Show found out about me. I got flown out to New York City the day before Thanksgiving in 2013. And once I got home from that, people started to call me and ask if I'd do their birthday parties.
What were you making at that point that you could do on the Today Show? Were you doing a turkey pancake?
Well, it was they had me do like a pilgrims and turkeys and stuff. But I also did, like, first off, I did like Al Roker and Matt Lauer's faces and all the, sure, the hosts and that stuff.
Sure. Do you need me to pose for this, like Kate Winslet in Titanic? Do I have to be shirtless and lay on a couch?
I mean, I guess you can if you really want to, but we've got reference photos pulled up.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do we have a say in that?
Yeah, Ross, would you go ahead and do photo approval?
Do you guys
on
even
the,
have a couch in here?
On the pancake that Dan's working on? So
I don't know if you want him to see those pictures of you.
What are you talking
your
about?
Son.
Oh, no, not those pictures.
Oh.
I just want to make sure Dan has, my good side, which would be the back of my head. pancake artist, could you work in other mediums?
The skill set kind of transfers over. Yeah. I mean, There's certain things that are specific to pancake art that you got to really learn how to do, like flipping it over and stuff. But sure. Then there's also like just a fundamental grasp of shapes and geometry and colors and all that kind sure. of stuff that works in all kinds of different mediums. So,
other dough possibly?
Other dough. I haven't really experimented.
Have you tried cookies?
We haven't done cookies. I mean, I've seen other people that do that, but I mean, I found my niche, you know.
You're the pancake.
I'm the pancake.
You're the doctor of pancakeology.
Yeah,
pancakery. I understand. Are we going to be periscoping this? Is that the deal? Okay, so we'll get the
future is now.
We'll get the Periscope address for that, so you guys can actually watch Dan doing this. How long will it take you to make my head?
5-10 minutes.
All right, so let's time this out appropriately. Do you need a practice pancake? Are you like a relief pitcher where you need to warm up first?
Not so much anymore. I used to mess them up all the time, but well, once you mess up about 15,000 of them, you're like, okay, all right.
So why don't you do one that you can show us before you work on the mastery of my head?
Okay.
How do I keep this, by the way? Do I freeze it? How do I keep my head?
Freezing it is the most consistent way to preserve it.
I will tell you that the Minnesota State Fair at one point carved my head in cheese.
I thought you were going to say ice, but cheese, that's okay,
cheese.
Too.
And then we had listeners come by with crackers, and they ate cheese out of my head.
That's,
It's a, in other words,
was
big
that on your
shoes
bucket list?
To fill.
Yeah, okay.
I thought you were going to say big cheese.
Nice to have you here. How do people follow you?
Well, we're all over social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram. You can just look for Dan Cakes, or our handle is at Dr. Dan Cake, DrDanCake. And then DanCakes.com. You can book us. You can get commissions of if you want to see your own face or a loved one's face in pancakes, all that kind of stuff. That's my full-time job now. So
God bless the work you're doing.
Thank you.
All right. Nice to see you, man. Thanks for being here. MB Financial Bank, thank you for bringing Dr. Dan over as well. All right. Well, of course, he had a big night last night.
I don't think Hillary has the strength or the energy to be a great president or to be president. I really don't.
Timothy L. O'Brien is the executive director of Bloomberg Gadfly, Bloomberg View. Been an editor and a writer for the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, the Huffington Post, Talk Magazine. Several years ago, he got access to Trump like nobody else. The only one closer to Trump is Melania. And O'Brien joins us now. Mr. O'Brien, good morning. How are you?
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Nice to talk to you. You are the only one currently on this phone call that's been sued by Donald Trump, but I like my chances.
Well, hang in there. Maybe it'll happen.
Yeah, I think I'm right up there with the possibility of having it hit. This comes
he likes
from,
to sue people.
Yes, he does. This comes from the book Trump Nation, where you showed the good, the bad, and the ugly of Trump. So you know him and you knew him much better than the rest of us when this started. Are you amazed, or did you sort of see this coming?
I don't think anyone saw it coming. On the other hand, I wouldn't say I'm amazed either. I mean, I think he's going to be with us for quite some time, whether he gets the nomination or not, whether he wins the presidency or not. I think he's been running the campaign thus far on a shoestring and basking in the limelight, and I think he's at the apex of where he's always wanted to be in his life, and I think he's going to stick around for quite a while, whether he's president or not. He's become a force on the political landscape, and I imagine if he's not in the White House, he'll get a brand new television show after all is said and done.
Did he ever say to you back in the day that he wanted to be president?
Oh, sure. I mean, remember, he's run quasi-serious campaigns a few times before. As I've noted elsewhere, I think he thinks of himself very cinematically. He's somebody who, before he went into his wealthy father's real estate business, had thought about moving out to Hollywood, become a movie producer.
Of course he did.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood's one of his favorite actors. I think he thinks of himself almost as a sheriff and High Plains drifter, walking down the middle of the street alone, ready to settle some scores. He thinks about himself that way. And I think that informs some of the showmanship that he pretty deftly brings to a lot of his self-promotion. The reality, however, is that person who's the self-promoter has never been a particularly good businessman.
The alleged wealth, which at one point he described as, day to day, it goes to how I feel. That's really not how you figure out a person's wealth. He claims it's around $10 billion. Look, he's clearly got a lot of money. But how much is a lot of money? Has there ever been an estimate that you've seen since he declared last June that he was running that you say, yeah, that's about right?
Well, no one really knows until, you know, he comes forward and lets, you know, a third-party accountant audit his finances through and through. During our litigation with him, he turned over tax returns and financial records. Among the documents we got was an audit by his own bankers that assessed his net worth at around $788 million at a time when he was telling me that he was worth $5 billion. Mm-hmm. He was telling casino regulators he was worth a few billion. It's all a little irrelevant in and of itself, Steve. The reality is that he's a wealthy man. However, he's a serial bloviator and an outright liar on a number of issues that goes beyond just his wealth. It goes to his track record in the casino industry. He put his casino company through 3 corporate bankruptcies. He's been through 4 corporate bankruptcies during his career. When he ran the casino business for over a decade, it was never profitable. When it went bankrupt, investors, employees, and pensioners and the city of Atlantic City were deeply harmed by that. In his real estate life, he hasn't really had a major high-scale project of his own in New York since Trump Tower in 1983. And he famously gorged on a lot of bank debt to buy a lot of assets he couldn't afford, which he then lost. And the person who emerged from that in the 1990s and then in the early 2000s was essentially a human shingle who licensed his name out on buildings, vodka, underwear, mattresses, you name it.
You name it is right, and that was part of the press conference the other night in Florida at Mar-a-Lago, where he rolled out products that once had the Trump logo or still did, including something I'd never seen before, fraud steaks. Steaks that he bought from a meat house somewhere else in Palm Beach. I guess the relevance of the wealth question to me is honesty and his ability to fund his own campaign, which is one of his core promises. If we know that it's going to cost $1 billion for the Republican nominee to run for president, he's got to get that money from somewhere. So isn't he dependent on how much people hate Hillary Clinton?
Well, what he's dependent on is the GOP's financial apparatus supporting a national campaign. If he were to release his tax returns, it would firm up the notion of whether or not he can self-finance. He's been running his campaign on a shoestring. A modern presidential campaign costs about $2 billion to fund. I am highly skeptical that he has that money. He told the New York Times a few weeks ago that he had $1 billion in cash on hand. I'm highly skeptical that he does. I don't think he's in any position to self-fund a presidential campaign, and his tax returns would make that clear. And if he's going to fund a serious campaign against Hillary Clinton, he's going to need serious money behind him. And I think that's going to be a problem for him.
Tim, he's so polarizing. People either hate him or love him, but he's pulling in the numbers. He's winning primaries. He's winning all these states. Do you see the Republican Party rallying around him should he get that nomination?
You know, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't, however, see the Republican Party right now as happy with him as the nominee. I think this is a historically cleaving moment for the GOP. I think the GOP is going to have a lot of wreckage to sort through in the wake of Trump's candidacy to decide what the party's about and what it wants to become. The other thing we have to remember is Trump has been getting around 30% of the primary vote in the GOP primaries. He's getting around 30% of 25% of the vote.
Right.
That
Pat Brady's here. Pat was on Channel 7 last night for the election coverage, and this morning he was on French TV. Why French TV?
They have an interest in this race. They are just astounded that Donald Trump is in the position he's in.
Get in line. The astounded line starts here.
Well, the good news is, Steve, as a John Kasich delegate, I actually won last night. So I will be on the convention floor.
Good. Congratulations.
I'm selling sponsorships on my suit.
Now, we plan on being in Cleveland for a brokered convention. Are you going to have time to be on the show?
Oh, yeah. Give me a headset. I'll be down there. I'll be the one screaming.
Oh, God.
You're going to be in the middle of like a ruckus?
I'm going to have a Dave and for president sign. There you go. It's going to be all over. It'll be worldwide news.
Oh, I love it. Thank you, Pat.
Remember on the Board of Trade on the floor where they used to give hand signals and scream out the commodities?
Yeah, yeah.
That's going to be Pat.
Now I'll be like Mayor Daley in 68.
So Kasich wins Ohio. Why is that enough to create a problem for the big orange one?
Kills the inevitability. It stops the bleeding. He cannot now realistically march to the nomination. He would have to win 60% of all the remaining delegates. There's still 1,000 delegates out, and he won't do that. So it's going to go hand-to-hand combat till June.
So he's won somewhere between 33 and 36% of the delegates so far. Is that the number?
Yeah, something like that.
All right, so he would have to jump that to 60.
60% of the rest of them, and there's still 1,000 available, and the electoral map actually benefits a guy like Kasich. You get in the northern states and the eastern states and some of the western states. And the analysis I saw this morning, 3-1 of Rubio's people go to Kasich.
But those Rubio delegates don't have to go anywhere, even if he releases them. They could do that ceremonial thing at the convention, right, where they announce for Rubio in the
it's
first
state
vote?
State by state. So the Minnesota delegates, for example, he won, are free agents.
Oh, officially already?
Officially already. But now it's different in every state.
Okay, so what's the process for that? Kasich calls and goes, how many of you want to go to Six Flags?
I think it's like
Sandy Point for you.
It might be like a Chicago City Council meeting, I think. This is going to be rules, backroom stuff. It's going to be a lot of...
And lawsuits.
With Trump, yeah, it'll be lawsuits. He threatened today that there were going to be riots if he didn't win.
Well, I find that hard to believe because he doesn't condone violence.
No, he's a very rational guy. This is the guy you want pushing the buttons.
Yes, and holding the bag, literally.
And looking at Putin.
Yeah, yeah. But can you imagine what Putin would do to Trump?
Oh.
Is your face really orange?
Can you imagine the Saturday Night Live sketches?
Well, at least we can laugh our way into oblivion. What is Ted Cruz's position in all of this in regards to his ability to be the spoiler?
He'll scream and yell for Kasich to get out, but the reality is it's going to be an open convention. They're going to split all these delegates up, and we're going to have quite a fight in July.
All right. So you were on a French national television network this morning.
I'm going. I did it before. I did it last week, but I'm going to do it again.
Oh, it's starting now?
It's at noon, yeah.
Okay. So that's a nighttime show there then, obviously.
Yes. I think it's.
Do you speak French?
No, and I told the producer I got kicked out of French in high school, so this better be all English. He said something in French. But
are you sure it's not going to be a bunch of French cafe waiters who are bringing you in just to make fun of you?
It might be a French, I don't know what it might be, something.
Just remember, je vais à la plage.
What does that mean?
Patrick.
I'm going to the beach.
Just repeat that over and over again. Will you be with us tomorrow?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so Pat Brady will be with us tomorrow as we do our regular Thursday wing dang doodle. Nice to see you, buddy.
You too. Thanks.
Andrea is off for a couple days. Where are you going?
I'm heading to the desert for some golf and spring training.
Okay.
A little R&R. I'll miss you guys.
And you as well. And Dave, you'll be here with me tomorrow?
I will be here. I'm not deserting you, Steve.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Mary as well. Steve standing by in the newsroom, and we're standing by for the official Supreme Court announcement.